his suicide at the carnival. His suicide.
Right, I think it's worth exploring. Yeah, I think that's a good way to open it.
Maybe take it through, show some of his
but
family
what
life.
What we want to decide most of all is how much of his life we want to show, tell. Are we going to try to cover a 10, 15-year span?
I think we should go back. I think it should end with him playing in the insane asylum, playing that piece. You can pan out on that.
So it's
really
the end. He's like 45.
50, 46? Oh, jeez, yeah. I didn't know.
43, he went, he entered the asylum.
Oh, no. That's right.
I mean, it would be nice. I mean, we're really talking, I guess.
Back to his college days, when he makes the decision to go from law into music. I think it's...
So we're talking about a 20-year span.
Yeah, that's it.
That's not too difficult.
Start with the suicide attempt. You take him back to his house. You see the interrelationships with his kids and his wife briefly before they come and cart him off to the asylum as he's on his way to his asylum.
Yeah, I think that's critical. After he's brought back from the river, I think we need to see that he has a wife. We need to see that he has kids.
Yeah.
And I think we need to see that he doesn't recognize him.
Yeah.
Because he didn't.
Right.
We're talking about
that's very important, but
back,
briefly as possible with that stuff.
Okay.
You know, just give him a taste of it.
It's
and then you're out, you're in the coach, you're going.
Right.
You do a transition back to him, maybe at the piano, playing away, doing these musical
jokes. As a
student, doing the musical jokes about his law professors, and through that paint the fact that he is not satisfied with his life as a lawyer, and that he's wanted to become a musician.
And a kind of hail fellow well met, cigar churning away,
mm-hmm.
having a great time. The greatest possible contrast, I think, with that more immobile.
Yeah, from
well,
where it was.
Right. Why is he in law school? Is it because his father wanted him to go to law school?
His mother.
Is there a conflict
his father had died.
Yeah.
His father actually would have been supportive of him to be a composer.
Mm-hmm.
But his mother was adamant.
Which can be very easily said in a few sentences.
Yeah,
you know.
she would pull all financial support unless he went to law school. So he felt
right, so
trapped.
So what we want to look for throughout is are the conflicts that existed in his life. Because conflict is drama. Yeah.
And I think that first conflict right away is the one that everybody knows about. Choosing a profession against parental wishes sometimes.
Okay, so that's good.
Okay?
Yeah.
All right, now you can pop on.
But just as little as possible. That, I mean,
always, I think all these, as John described, nuggets should be just that. We need to find the transitional flesh that's going to connect them together, but they should be nuggets.
It's like cylinders firing an engine.
Right.
Each one.
So when we open, I think what's going to hook our audience up front is this mysterious figure, you know, who's on his way to commit suicide.
This incredible, you know, crowd and beautiful fairs.
Right, but let's get some idea of what's going on in the guy's head. I mean, they can be the ravings of a, you know, of a suicidal
I picture,
maniac.
I just
I
picture
mean,
him,
really gonna,
I picture him as a very directed man. He is out to do one thing, kill himself.
Yeah, and you have passers-by who recognize him. Maybe we could have a chorus of voices from them as he shoulders his way through the crowd. They could tell us who he is and what he's been doing.
But incredibly directed. There's one look on his face, a look of determination.
Yeah.
He's going to get to the bridge and he's going to jump off. And then they save him and he realizes that he hasn't died. So he does it again.
Yeah,
he throws him on
the side. But do we, the audience, have any inkling as to why he wants to commit suicide?
Absolutely
not.
None whatsoever.
Well, the whole story is what leads it up to that point. It's what tells us what's... That's why we want to see the contrast from the...
I want to keep watching and see
what's going on here.
So, all right, so the idea is to create a figure of mystery up front.
Absolutely.
You know? Okay, so...
Absolutely.
But
and
surrounded
then,
by some voices who will identify.
Yeah, okay.
And
so
then you pop back and you see him gay and as he, as you say, fellas well met and the whole thing.
Okay.
Boom, you give a beautiful, also a beautiful stretch of character. You're seeing two apps, the antithesis of each other in the same man.
That's
and you're
good.
Going to see an older man trying to commit suicide and a younger man who's going to look just like him, but obviously 20-some-odd years younger.
Mm.
And he's there having a great time. Now, where do we go from there?
Fun times at the piano, maybe voiceover. He's telling his mother he's decided he cannot handle the law. He's got to be a composer. It's what he wants to do.
She's ostracized him now.
Yeah,
she's out on his own.
Threatens to cut him off.
Right,
and he immediately goes and takes steps to build his career as a musician.
Right,
and a composer.
So when we flash back, that's when we pick up what we call the linear story thread.
Right.
And the very first thing that we want to introduce right up front is the first conflict. You know, that has to do with his.
Very easily, he could be in there, fellas well met, having a great time, and all of a sudden a communication arrives from his mother saying, "I'm sorry, but you know, I'm not going to support you any further unless you endeavor into law." And then he turns to his fellas and says, "Well, what should we do about this or whatever?" You know what I'm saying? He makes the decision right then and there. tears it up and says, that's it, you know, which is also, which also paints the first of his romantic overbearing of his, of his, you know, it's his, he paints that romantic wild image by doing that. Well, she won't support me, fine, I'll rip it up.
People like,
because I'm going to do what I want to do.
People like characters who are very directed, I think. Now, he was a confused man, but there's enough direction that we can point up.
Oh, that's, but that can all be done in the performance. You can see, you can see the pathos in the eyes when he rips it up. Of course I'm going to rip it up. And then there's that look of ultimate fear in his eyes.
But again, marvelous counterpoint there. There he wants to do this. He's very directed to it. And the next thing we cut to might be the realization that his hand is gone. However, he might.
Well, I think
that
we should save that.
Or maybe the passage.
I think we should save that. I think the next thing
the
we should cut to is how he goes about trying to.
Very much a part of him starting to turn.
Yes.
Yeah. I see that too.
First, we, as you say, we have to get into that. We have to make a directed character. I think we should follow his endeavors into how he goes about trying to become a musician, which also happens to be how he meets Clara.
But the hand could be the pivot whenever you wanted to get to it.
Now
the
we can.
The hand seems to that. The obsession that goes along with his hand and trying to get his hand back into shape or whatever, that to me is the first tip off that this guy is beginning to go insane.
And John, what were you telling me about this?
So that's that I would think you would want to save for a little later on.
For a little later on, yes.
Yeah. Listen to this.
Yeah, the bit with his hand is interesting because it was very convenient that it happened to the two middle fingers of his right hand because the draft was after. All young men had a draft to worry about in those days as well. It kept him out of the draft. And he made sure that he had the documents to the draft board that it would keep him out of the draft. Mm. I don't know how much you wanted to get into that, but it's
so been, there's always a method to his madness.
It's a completely unknown aspect of that hand.
Now, how much of the diabolical machine that he attached to his hands is true?
But that goes hand in hand, really, with what struck you at the very beginning, which was that here's a guy who the Romantic era is teaching to be insane because that's where this well of inspiration comes from, and where his music comes out of.
And I think there should be
so he's constantly doing this walking the line number, and you do it enough, buddy, and it's going to get you, and it does get you.
Sooner or later, you're going to fall off the wrong side of the road.
Right.
I mean, I think that's our theme, really.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is. That's the basic theme.
That's at the very bottom of the whole thing is that's what we're sort of saying with this.
How much of the infernal machine is true?
Well, what we saw, did you see Spring Symphony?
No.
What you see in Spring Symphony was a counterweight rigged up to a sling on his finger. That I don't think is true at all. He had,
You know something? They had it hooked up to his middle finger.
Yeah, it's wrong. It would be this finger. It would be the fourth finger.
Well, see, part of the controversy is that nobody could agree which finger it was that was damaged.
Well,
this is what's so suspicious.
If you were going to do it from a technical standpoint, it would be
the fourth finger.
Because these two are joined together.
They're both joined.
But the trigger finger is the index finger. And as I understand
this
part of his hand that got partially paralyzed. Everybody identifies it as a different finger. It's so weird.
It would have to be the fourth finger, period. It is the fourth finger, because that's the only one.
This is authority speaking.
Absolutely.
The
it's very easy to move that finger. This one is very hard to move.
Yeah, in fact, I can't believe you can move it that much.
Well, I'm a classical pianist.
How did he paralyze his finger?
He attached an infernal machine to his fourth finger.
To the best of our knowledge, it's a device that held the finger aloof or raised up above the other fingers, so that when he would play within stretch these tendons here.
Well, what it really is this, the separation comes right there, as you can see. There's the muscle. Mm-hmm. That's the muscle he ripped, right there.
Okay, what happened was the more strain was put here, then the more screwed up that
the
got.
More,
I don't
well,
know
the whole
the physiology
idea is these two fingers are joined by the same tendon. The pianist, in gaining independence in his fourth finger, slowly but surely rips the muscle up. Now, he tried to rush the process and ended up just completely ripping the muscle apart.
But it's just the character becomes kind of immediate in the sense, though, getting out of the draft was an awfully nice thing
well,
to have happen.
Well, I think that's actually, if we are going to take a little artistic license, I kind of like that angle better.
Yeah. Well, that puts it in the modern world.
It certainly does.
But it also puts the fact that this man is actually malleating his body in order to fulfill...
That's not a very sympathetic. That's not a very sympathetic characteristic.
That's what I'm a little worried about.
Well, that's a good point.
I mean, you gotta, be attentive to what you gotta make.
All right, let's get back to our linear narrative here.
So he's
in college
there,
and he's got a conflict with his mother about being a law student, and he decides to go against his mother's best wishes, which has to create inside of him a certain amount of inner turmoil. But he's this driven character, so he. So, okay, what's the result of going against his...
He goes off and proceeds to start studying music.
Yeah, as a performer, not as a composer.
Okay, first. But what is the result of him going against his mother's wishes in terms of how does it affect his relationship with his mother?
They are ostracized. She ostracizes him. She
yeah, initially. Now, they have a reconciliation.
Yeah.
But as far as I know, at least at first, she cut him off. He had to go live with them, with the people he was studying with. So it was very definitely his severing of the umbilical cord.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Because she had his support and money while he was in law school.
Okay, so that's mm-hmm. good stuff.
That's all good stuff.
When we show...
maybe that, too, is a little bit of a... Maybe at the very beginning he's starting to turn a little bit, become a little odd as a result of the severing and this mother...
Well,
his influence being gone. You know what I mean?
Sure
it's like
his,
a little a young guy getting away from the apron strings for the first time. He's a little wild. He's a little crazy. He's starting to get carried away with himself and everything around him.
And a lot
he's
of that
free.
Zeal fed into his
This relationship that he has early on with his mother is an opportunity for us to do a number of things simultaneously. We can exploit a conflict that he has, show, you know, inner turmoil and how he resolves that. And we could also use this whole business between him and his mother and leaving law school and getting cut off and to show what a, you know, directed, driven character he is, you know. And it's all exploitable, dramatic stuff.
A point you might think about, and that is the relationship of not having a father. When did his father die?
He died. Actually, this is very interesting. The father died when Schumann was about 14.
Oh, shit. Okay, but
terrible.
Okay,
and his sister committed suicide. He had a sister that committed suicide.
Hey, how you doing? Good.
Fucking recording I ever heard of the Schumann Concerto was hers.
Was hers. I've not heard her play
the
yet.
The worst. It's at halftime. It's no strength. There's no verve. No nothing.
Well, she may be
best I ever heard was
verb.
Vyacheslav Richter.
Yeah, Serkin's all very good on that.
I haven't heard Serkin.
And Byron Janis has a good one.
Haven't heard him either.
But he called his hand a poor, cramped spider.
Okay,
let's
pop this on.
Let's do that.
Yeah, we're on. As you were...
We are on!
We're not on.
Yeah, we're on.
you
told me to
that.
Turn it on.
Now you've got something on.
He did tell me to turn it on.
No, I told you to turn it off. Let's go back
right now.
He's going to show he's going to play that for.
I mean, that's, you know what I did yesterday on the $25,000 pyramid.
Now we can turn the tape recorder off.
Dick Clark is saying, so you got the movie That's Life out, and Bert Convy directed you in Weekend Warriors, too. But I think That's Life is doing a little bit better. And I said, no, I think Weekend Warriors has frozen nationwide TV.
Oh, really?
You know, and then afterwards I said,
thanks, Dad.
Why did I say that? What was the reasoning behind saying something like that? You know, and then it's too late. So hopefully nobody will be watching
it's
on Friday.
It's always too late, man.
I think Blake will understand.
Could I suggest one more aspect of this thing with hands? There's something else about this thing with hands I think it's fascinating. Is that here's this little girl meeting this man 10 years her senior, and I can just see him guiding her hands at the keyboard, too. I mean, you've got this whole play of hands thing. It could be extremely interesting. A man's hand guiding a child's hand, then maybe her hand and his hand working together on a duet, then his hand getting crippled and stumbling across the keys, and then her hand playing his music.
Yeah, but I think there's you're just glossing over an enormous...
Well, they don't need to happen all at once, but you can have a kind of lightmotif of hands.
Let me follow up on the point we were doing before, which we ended on for the phone call, and that was the parental thing. This movie, Spring Symphony, Symphony, made a big thing about Clara's father keeping her away from Robert. And yet he's the one that let Robert in to begin with.
And he was an original member of that Davids Bunker group, too.
Yeah, right. So, I mean, it's interesting. I wonder if there's anything in the fact that Robert lost his father, and now her father is so vehemently trying to keep them apart, and the mother... There's just so many different influences coming
in on
the vocal.
A little too much. I mean, we can touch on it, but I don't want to get onto that too much. That's sidetracking.
Well, it's something that just for flavor.
Or whether
think about
whether her father was for a while a substitute father for him.
Yeah, see, I mean, it almost suggested that in the
3 hours.
Because he becomes part of the household.
He does very much. I mean, he's very much in part of the normal routine around the house.
See, this is I think if we hit that too hard, I just see that one laying there. I just see that whole section.
I do too.
There.
I do too. But it's flavor. It's something to think about building.
But don't dwell on it. I don't think.
What happens is you line up all the ducks in something like this, but then you decide what kind of weight to give them and what kind of proportion
they're out. We've got to stop talking about,
little segues
that are going to be nice and then dissolve from the hands to the hands. Because that's the story.
We've got it now firmly ensconced in Clara's father's household. That's where he went to study music. That's how he combats his mother. Fine, bitch, I'm going off to study music.
Okay.
So he goes off to this fellow who's got a school of music.
He had met.
And that turns out to be Clara's father.
It turns out to be Clara's father.
Right. Clara's how much younger than...
We can't have them be just a few.
How much younger do we
about
want?
About 10 years.
They're 10 years. No, but we want her to be only 3 to 5. And we can't...
Yeah, let's make her maybe 5 years younger than him. So there can be an immediate sexual
attraction.
She's got
to go to... Yeah, I mean, she's got to go from... let's make her 17 to 18. Let's make him 22. You know, that kind of thing. So then when they come up to 42, she's 38. They both age basically the same.
And that isn't bad because she was far more mature in many respects than he was. She had seen much more of the world.
Okay, so he leaves college against his mother's wishes.
She's got to be fine.
His mother cuts him off. He goes to this music school that's run by Clara's father, and there he meets this angelic young girl, you know, who's 5 years younger and immediately falls in love with her. Okay? All right. What is he doing to pay his way through this school at this time? How's he, now that he's not getting any money from home?
Do you know that, Joe?
I really don't, because there is some savings, I know that. And he didn't really stay there that long because he did have to start making a living. He was in the house about 4 months. He was then around the house and around her for several years thereafter, but he was forming this journal. Closest thing that I can find to an income, apart from his mother, is that journal.
That's perfect, though. That's perfect. He had to make a living, so he starts this journal.
Exactly.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. I'm just saying this. I'm always keeping an ear out for what are the conflicts here. Right. What conflicts can we seize on? Because let's remember, guys, conflict is drama.
Okay.
So, all right, so the first conflict he has with his mother, that's resolved, and it pushes him into... You know, his next setting, which is at Claire's father's house, where he's learning to
be a concert pianist, which would have been an income.
Paul's is.
Conflict number two doesn't wash out. He cannot be a concert pianist, therefore there's no livelihood from that.
So the next conflict that he's dealing with, I think, at this point, is how is he going to, hey, Paul, how's it going?
This is Paul's is.
I know.
Oh, all you got some avocados?
Yeah.
Great. See, it happens all at once, Buzz. He ruins his hand. There's no career open to him as a performer. Now he's got to be a composer, but new and tried young composers aren't getting anywhere, so he's got to form this journal. All this happens within like 2 months.
Right. Now that's good. That's beautiful. We're sailing right on now.
All right, so I think the structure that we're looking for here is a conflict, once resolved, leads to a greater conflict, which once resolved leads to an even greater conflict.
Because indeed,
you know,
you're right.
This is
has been cast.
Did he do anything like playing for money anywhere, like in clubs or playing off this opening scene we were talking about, which was him making fun of his professors through piano? Did he carry that any further? Did he work?
I have no record of anything like that, but he did.
I mean,
when
late
he would
hours
write music,
and stuff like that.
Yeah, when he would write music, he would have it performed for friends, clubs, societies, salons, things like that. Nobody was paying any attention to it, though. Clara first performed some of his little pieces at that age when he was forced to become a composer. Right. See, it truly was desperate then. He didn't have anything else.
Conflict. He cannot make a living as a classical pianist, so he has to become a composer.
And he's got to find somebody to do it. Clara is available.
Clara is there, which strengthens the attraction of the bond between them.
Indeed it does.
Now we can jump into the hurt hand, I think.
What we want to try to get...
Well, the hurt hand has to precede the composing. Because the hand is hurt that he cannot perform.
Oh, I thought it was because he just couldn't find a job as a performer.
No, the performing was initially what he wanted to do, to perform and compose. But as a performer, there's money there, there's income. And her father had told him that he could become, within 2 years, one of the greatest pianists in the world. So he had this as a goal. It was when the hand got screwed up that he had to then turn to composing.
Right.
And then Clara becomes doubly important. But nobody's listening to the music, so he's got to start the journal, and this is where our young Citizen Kane comes in. Yeah.
Now, what I want to know is how we're going to get through this major hump of all of a sudden, you know, all the family, the children, you know, it's a... Maybe that's where we want to kind of jump some time to show that, yes, maybe through a montage sequence where she's out running around playing all over, being pregnant, getting more pregnant, having a child coming back, him taking care of
the
kids.
Yeah, but,
yeah, also, I mean, just, for some reason, don't see that kind of a montage going in this kind of a piece. It just doesn't...
Yeah, but you've got to establish that. You've got to establish that the guy really came and it really had... real traditional roots, that he wasn't just a maniac out there just
spinning. Now, this is why the journal, I think, is so important. Because everybody knows what it's like to start, that first job you get, that's what his journal is. He forms it himself, he's got enough legal training, and his brother is a publisher, so he's got some lines out. He can get a journal established, he can get it published, he can pay the typesetters, he can pay the people to distribute it, he is accepting contributors. And he's trying to make a living with a decent, respectable job. Being a composer is not going to do it. He's composing on his own. It's the journal that's his public activity and his income.
Well, maybe we should just play down the whole family into it.
Well, I think we
Let's continue on the course we're going, and then we'll make that decision.
Yeah.
We've got him coming out of school. He's now he's had the confrontation with his mother. That's... still going on, so he goes into this music school where he meets Clara. He's gotten it really pretty solidly to that point.
Okay.
Where do we progress
from there?
He tries too hard, the hand gets screwed up, whether or not we treat with the draft, who knows. The hand gets screwed up.
He has to become a composer.
She has to play, he has to compose.
First he has to become a composer. That's another conflict. Mm-hmm. He's now got his
he's
first
got
love is, and boy, can
so
I really,
going
yeah,
for
I always wanted to be a classical pianist too,
to a composer.
And I wasn't good enough. So now I'm a composer, and that's an enormous conflict, personal conflict.
Well, it's also a compromise too, I bet.
And everybody has to make it in their jobs.
Of course it is, which creates the conflict.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, I want to say it again for the sake of the tape recorder, because when you go back and listen to this, I do think that this ought to be the structure that we keep in mind. Is that conflict, you know, once resolved, leads to an even greater conflict, which once resolved, leads to an even greater conflict, all the way up to the point where there's no out except suicide.
Right. So his last conflict is having to literally compromise his ability to be a classical pianist because he has maybe even purposely destroyed his right hand.
Boy, you know what? Okay, that is the ticket to me, the real key. That may be one to come a little later in the story, but I guess
one propels him
into becoming a composer, so it has to be there.
See, he may have realized that he wasn't going to be a good enough pianist. And somewhere psychologically, with the draft also hanging over him, the whole hand business just is too coincidental.
I think that's a great angle to approach it on.
Yeah,
and
the draft is too much.
The whole idea that he may not have been good enough.
Yeah.
That's the concept.
That's good. Yeah. Because if what we've got here is sort of a tragedy, you know, I mean, if we could call this whole piece, you know, a tragedy as opposed to a comedy or something else.
Well, the tragedy is that he was good enough. And everybody told him he was good enough. Well, he's the one that thinks maybe
that decides that he wasn't.
Yeah, the tragedy for most of us is that we think we're good at one thing, and it turns out we're good at another. Right. He at least found out soon enough that he was good at something else.
Right.
here's what makes a tragedy, I think. You've got a character who has some sort of internal conflict that's tugging him or her in two different directions at the same time, and they've got to somehow resolve that conflict. And so our character sets out on a path of action to try to resolve the conflict that exists within himself. And in the course of doing so, inadvertently sows the seeds of his own destruction.
Right, absolutely. That's it.
Okay, that's the movie Terrence Ober, by the way.
That's it.
But
that's the stuff of all great stories.
Right, yeah. Exactly.
Well, we got it here.
Sophocles could tell
us that. Another conflict that I see brewing here, I mean, whether this happened in his real life or not, is the, he falls for Clara. Now, what about the father? Does the father disapprove of...
That's the whole thing. He tries to keep them apart.
Now, there's a conflict.
But you know why that is, though, Buzz? It's because the father wants her for himself. Which is definitely something to broach, I mean, in terms of modern television.
No problem. The crux of the whole conflict is that they both need her.
Okay.
They both have to have her.
The father.
The father has to have her for his own, I hate to say incestuous, you know, reasons, but that's the only word that comes to mind. And Schumann needs her to be his hands.
Right. Yeah, okay, that's great. That's great. So there's a major conflict between Schumann and Clara's father.
They both have to have her, but Schumann needs her more.
Okay.
And she needs to be needed.
And she needs to be needed.
Right.
And she loves Schumann. So
okay, so he wins her.
He wins her, and she becomes his hands.
Okay.
Now we can come into the real conflict that turns him...
Yeah.
Okay. Which is that beautiful picture of him looking out the window while she's performing his music, and they're all clapping for her performance, and nobody gives a shit about her.
So he resolves the conflict between him and Clara's father by winning Clara. Mm-hmm. Now that he's got her, the new conflict arises, which is she's getting all the recognition, and he's getting none of it.
But he's the creator.
But the most amazing thing about that is it's all coming from within his brain.
Right.
So for the first time, we start to really pull the whole thing inside his head.
That's right. And now we can
then
go there.
Then we start to get inside.
Now we can see his internal frustration.
We're on the run to the end.
That's
we're
it.
Pretty much to
that
final
it.
Conflict and how that's...
All right. So if we were to break this down into, and I think it's helpful to do this, into Act 1, Act 2, and Act 3, mm-hmm. where do we see the breaks coming?
Act 1 would be starting with him at the fair trying to commit suicide, flashing back to him playing piano with his friends, and eventually getting to the confrontation with his mother that makes him decide to go into music.
Okay.
No, I think we continue from there. I think it's up to where we meet Clara.
Yeah, suicide could be like a prologue, and then Act 1 could be
him.
I think we should take
suicide
it
is a prologue,
and the second act is Clara.
But it's
and
it's
the father and
it's
him
and
right.
the journal.
I would really fight
to keep that journal in because it shows him as a resourceful, dynamic guy trying to make a buck.
Okay, well that's good. I mean, the first act
break comes where?
Well, we meet Clara.
He has a confrontation with his mother. He decides to become a musician. He meets Clara.
He goes out
and
but the musician's what takes him to Clara. He goes to the school. He gets enrolled there. It's really not at first that he first sees Clara. Maybe he's too involved in trying to become his own. And then he sees Clara when she comes back from a tour or something like
that. He has a great line about that. He wrote her in a letter once, 3 years after they'd met. He says, "You're not the same person that I used to know. You seem to have grown more unfamiliar." That's what he loved. Now she's elusive. She was just a child before. Now she's a mystery. She gets older. I love that.
So then we have the introduction of Clara and Clara and the father and Schumann. And then from there...
Act 2.
That's Act 2. Act 2 is them...
So the end of Act 2 is
it's him destroying his hands.
Destroying his hands, having the confrontation with
Clara's
father.
Maybe the end of Act 2 is him looking out the window.
No, the end of Act 2 is him marrying Clara.
Yeah.
The beginning of Act 2 is him looking out the window. Or Act 3 is him looking out the window.
Marrying Clara is probably in there. The Act 3 would be a little shorter than Act 2. Act 2 is traditionally a little longer. It's the bulk.
Actually, that wouldn't be a bad place to take it to, would it?
So if you take it to him staring
out the window, it's a great cut.
Schumann is now going inward.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So we got to pull the audience inward. So then we get into his insanity.
Yeah, right.
So the third part is hysteria almost. And also is the introduction of Brahms.
See, as a result of his turning inward, he becomes less responsive to society around him. He loses several jobs.
It should also
in
also
a couple
be,
of cities.
Yes. I'm sorry, John, go ahead.
Yeah, he loses several jobs because he's going to be a choral conductor. These composers never make their living composing.
Yeah.
They always do something else, whether it's the journal, or, secondly, to be a orchestra or choral conductor in various cities. And he tries it in various cities. And he fails because he's not tracking it anymore. He loses the tempo. He's no good at rehearsals. He's not responsive to the people around him. He's going inward. And so you have a man facing some humiliation here. He's losing jobs.
I think also during the second act with the journal, there should be a strong indication that he really is Germany's greatest at the moment, that he's discovered.
Yeah, we really have to know
that's why the journal is so important.
That did not in any way come out for me in Spring Symphony.
And after
I never
spoke
knew the weight of Schumann at all in that movie.
Mm-hmm. And after I spoke with you, was it yesterday or the day before, you asked me what I thought of the film. And I made it my mind that I wanted to tell you about this journal thing today because it's so important to show how important he was. It's the best way we have of showing that. As the confidant, the herald, the chronicler of a whole new age, of young people. They were, it was a like I said, a, both a secret and a real life society. And I think it's extremely important to show him as a dynamic spearhead of a whole new movement, a whole new sensibility. People like young people that are kicking some ass.
Right, right.
Going after a few windmills.
And also a discovery of people like Liszt, Chopin, these things. That should really be, because
all of this
gives him weight.
Second act stuff.
Yeah.
Second act begins with him winning Clara.
Yeah, the second act could be the peak of his success. Yeah.
Right.
In that sense.
Going through creating the journal, the whole
Spaghetti,
and ends with him staring out the window at the snow, with her getting all the recognition, and his
and also his reputation would be obviously.
But by this time, we have introduced Brahms as a character. And
oh,
Chopin,
yeah. And then he's on Chopin and Liszt.
Who he has discovered.
Right.
Which is really interesting, because here Clara has discovered him, and he goes out and discovers these other guys who themselves become what he wanted to be, the composer player.
Yes, in fact, Chopin snubbed him. Chopin really never returned the good graces and good favor, and that was a thing that Schumann found it tough to swallow. That
Chopin
this young
was such
man.
A wheezy little guy.
Chopin was a very unpleasant person. So here's a guy.
Well, didn't his sister die at 18 of tuberculosis?
He
was supposed to die at 20, and he ended up at 39.
But it is so
true. Well,
there's
that famous story where a young guy had been coming and came in and played one of Chopin's. I think it was one of his mazurkas, and halfway through the performance, he broke a string, and turned to him and said, "Oh, maestro, my God, I'm so sorry." And Chopin's return was, "Young man, if I had your string, there wouldn't be a string left in the piano by the end of my mazurka."
No, that's right. That was Adam something. Yeah, it's true. It's a true story. Schumann was probably the most unselfish of all of the great music critics, quite apart from his role as a composer. And most of the people just didn't return the good
feelings.
Well,
that's all meaty stuff.
What a horrible thing, And there's another thing, too, that you may want to dismiss this right away, but there's a marvelous tableau that could be put where he goes to Vienna, he wants to relocate his magazine there to make more money, to get Clara, and to establish a home there. So he takes his magazine interest to Vienna. And by the way, why don't I go visit Franz Schubert's home, where his brother still lives? Schubert was his most favorite composer. He goes to Schubert, is shown a whole bunch of unpublished manuscripts, and discovers some of the great works that we now know as Schubert's masterpieces. Schumann discovered them.
And
this was the high point of his life, he said, was discovering those missing works. Now, that may be of a more musical concern, and you might not want to
mess with it. Yeah, it doesn't advance the story to it.
Yeah. But it was a great personal triumph for him.
I'm sure. Well, I'm not throwing that for a line or something. One of the things that it seems like we might think about doing, which Mozart did, or Amadeus, was to centralize the characters. They stayed in a town, or they stayed in an apartment. A centralized, I know that he has a lot of this, but if we start having him go out, may kind of
Leipzig is your
separate them
stay
too much.
Leipzig.
And,
Leipzig.
I mean, we got one character going out.
Well, it's something.
And playing
I'll tell you what else is interesting, too, about Amadeus, now that you mention it. You have your Salieri-Mozart duality there. Mm. You have the same thing with Schumann. Felix Mendelssohn was one of his dearest friends, yet it was Mendelssohn who was lauded as the great composer of the age and the genius and all this. And Mendelssohn himself took that position over Schumann. Yet it's unquestionably Schumann who is the greater of the two composers. But you've got this duality once again. If you need an anchor to keep comparing Schumann to characters, Mendelssohn is ideal.
Should bear in mind. It's the stuff we should bear in mind.
Well, maybe
it's for later.
Yeah, we should also try
to
minimize too many peripheral characters.
Let's get on to Act Three. We've got Act One and Two an outline of. We leave Schumann staring out the window, emasculated, basically.
And then the jobs are that are lost follow.
Now Act Three has to turn in and become his own personal hell, his own inferno, that eventually leads him back to the suicide scene, and we can take him into the asylum, where he regains some sort of sanity, but it just doesn't have the strength to face the world again.
You know, what'd
so
be interesting?
He remains solitary inside of the asylum, and you can end with a lovely scene of him thinking he hears the voices of the angels and playing it on the piano.
Well, that's what is there's a certain amount of a lot of people hate to be alone, basically, and in an asylum, you always you want to be alone. You're driven to be alone. You know, maybe there's a certain comfort that he finally gets, and it's his most purified state of composing. Maybe you know where
he really truly thought he heard the voice of the angelic choir.
Maybe that's what we're all leading
to. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
that's maybe what we're leading up to, is that moment where the audience almost says he's okay, even though he's probably his most winged out. You know what I mean? Where he's actually, he's accomplishing, and from a composer's standpoint, his purest and his best.
But how hard that would see that last scene of him with his eyes closed.
Maybe that's how we can
sitting at the piano,
this
playing that small piano piece in just a deserted room with this, you know, view and just a piano in a room, and he's playing.
And how hard that would be
and just goes out the window.
Understand.
And you see Germany.
Yeah. Well, I think though that it's the hardest thing for people to understand, because one, it's the scariest place for any human being. The majority of people out there freak out when they got to be alone and without anything else around them, and they don't have the devices that Schumann has.
Yeah, but how alone was
Schumann?
Remember, he has all of his friends upstairs.
Yeah, but let's try to focus in on this one little.
He's pretty alone, Chris.
Because I think that's really
one of the only people that comes to visit.
No, I mean all his friends up here.
Oh.
Yeah, well, that's what.
Yeah.
All right, in Act 3, I think part of what's driving him insane is this affair that his wife is having that he knows about with Brahms.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's got to be a part of Act 3.
Was that while he was in the asylum, though?
See, another young talent he discovers who turns on him, just like
the
other ones have. That becomes a repetition.
I think that would be a good way to start Act 3, the discovery of Brahms, and bringing him into his household.
But well, just keep in mind that all these tragedies lead up to, I mean, they've got to go somewhere. Let's not just have our character, we've got to somehow see why all these people dump on him like they do and turn on him and never reciprocate. I mean, is it because they're such assholes that they can't recognize what Schumann has done for them? Or is there something in Schumann's character that actually drives himself into thinking that they're doing this? Or is he paranoid?
Well,
I
think it's kind of the fate of a lot of nice guys, putting it bluntly.
Well,
he was a very...
That's not that interesting.
That is not interesting.
Could be.
It's bad. I think we have to solve that. I think we have to somehow... don't you think? I mean,
I know. We've got a much more interesting character if we stick with this idea of a hero that sows the seeds of his own destruction. You know,
that doesn't mean he can't be a nice guy. That doesn't mean he can't be a shit receptacle.
Sure. If we go back to what we were talking about, you know, hours ago... And what I'm referring to is what we all sort of feel would be a good theme for this movie, is this thing of him flirting with insanity.
Yes.
We can see this in him early on, right in the first act, the way he does this. And he's greatly enamored of all the great artists that have gone before and the way they've behaved and the way they've all had their, you know...
Well, you could see it in the first moment when he receives the letter from his mother, and maybe he's been in a jovial, fine mood, and suddenly he slams his fingers, his hands down on the keyboard and says, "How dare she? How dare she? Well, I'll show her what it is." Boom, and I'm ripping up the letter, and I'm going to do what I want to do. But at the same time, you see that fear in his eyes.
He had a violent
temper. Of course he did.
This is amazing. I mean, it's like you guys have been reading all...
Of course, he had a violent temper. How could he know he was without a violent temper?
Well, he did indeed.
There are only a few different kinds of people.
I described him as a nice guy, but it didn't keep him from dumping on Chopin also later when Chopin didn't match up to his expectations. I mean, he accused him of copping out. Yeah.
Schumann was one of the greatest.
I mean, he was very tough on people. If they didn't measure up, no matter if he discovered them or not.
Chopin did start to fall apart later on in his career. Some of his music it was very commercial.
His later music is actually much the weakest.
Sure, and then he started letting his publishers put names like The Revolutionary on his etudes and things like that. He really got commercial at the end.
Mm-hmm. And Schumann hated all this, and he sounded notice on it again in the journal.
Schumann was a purist, and Chopin turned out not to be one.
That darn journal is his...
Here you go. That's a great, you know, I mean, maybe some of those things that came later in Schumann's life can come a little earlier in the story. So that those are seeds too that he's not doing for his own destruction, but we see that he's not just a nice guy pushover character. I mean that just doesn't ring real well, even though he is.
I think the real key to it is
he's not a nice guy when it comes to his whole approach to life.
Absolutely, yeah, you're right.
That's where he draws the line. He's a nice guy with his wife, with his children, with his family, and all of that. But when it comes to his art, I mean, there's nothing.
How hard that is for somebody to say, well, he's my friend. Why is he putting me down? Why is he attacking me in his magazine? He's my friend. And, you know, people who expect those kinds of loyalties to be everybody patting each other on the back, they couldn't understand a character.
Which
like
could
that.
Also undermine his own self-security.
Everybody know that we're now reaching the point where he's going to need a ride to the airport.
Yeah, we're going to have to get going.
Right. If he has to get back to the hotel.
Just for the,
So in other words, maybe in Act 3, things kind of come home to roost. Some of the enemies he's made.
Exactly. Right. And that only helps to enhance his own insecurity.
Right, which in turn causes him to lose several very important job positions, which is really a bummer.
Which simply makes him that much more introspective and causes him to create his little friends.
And which forces him to move, guess where?
Now,
to where he...
And now we bring in his two friends that come into the journal, his two, his id and his ego friends. And he being the superego himself and the whole idea of him driving himself slowly insane because he can't... That was the way it is. That's what you're supposed to be. You're supposed to be slightly eccentric in order to be a great romantic composer, but now it's gone over the edge.
Precisely.
And now he's fallen off the wrong side.
In fact, this is interesting. The psychiatrist brings this out. In Schumann's letters and everything, he used to refer to himself as crazy, mad, insane all the way through his early journals.
Laughing.
His
laughingly.
Early student things.
Like crazy, mad,
to be
insane.
Proud of. Mm-hmm. But after the marriage... He talks about his illness and stuff like that.
Yes, because
he realized it was not a romantic joke anymore.
Right.
No,
turned
it in. He drove himself crazy.
Yeah.
And he was always aware of it, though. That's what's so bizarre.
Of course, he wanted to be. He wanted to be crazy, but he didn't want to be out of control crazy. But how do you paint that fine line?
And the first two acts, what we have to lay in are all those things. Like you said, in the third act, all the chickens come home to roost, you know.
Sure, and you start it with him, here he is laughing, joking, and having a brandy, and then smashing his hands down at the receipt of his mother's letter. He could have received it before, and he's having a grand, then finally the memory, and bam! How could she do this to me?
The actor at you.
Well,
it's coming out, it's weird.
And really, what a shock to show us a character that soon who we can't quite depend upon, because he can... cut loose.
Oh yeah.
And he can completely change.
And really big. I mean, just go.
I mean, somebody
and then
would
all
like
of a sudden, no, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Fine. If that's the way she wants it, then I'll show her. And off he goes.
Yeah,
he does.
It's got to be just a glimpse because we do want the contrast to be in there as well from his insanity to him being a very,
And of course, the end of the third act, I think, Buzzy, I think you agree with me, it's got to be, you bring it back up to time. Now he's in the coach. He's aged. His hand is crippled. He's in the asylum. We can do a little stuff in the asylum, just show that how Clara has drifted away, but he still cares about Clara, even though he doesn't quite even know that he has a wife and children, except every once in a while. And
he didn't.
Maybe Brahms is giving her Barry and the Herman there.
You know, she didn't visit him until just 2 days before he died. Mm-hmm. There were 2.5 years he was in that place, and she never went to see him once.
Well...
God, so that's now
it's her visit.
And then, of course,
him.
Then it's him. Then it's like that.
That's what you're saying.
That's good, yeah.
And then
that's really the complete destruction of the romantic character.
A lovely scene at the end of him literally just thinking that he's in heaven already on Earth in that beautiful, just a stone room with a piano, a grand piano in the middle, and he's,
So long as
and it was a piano that belonged to Liszt.
That he had, incidentally, too.
We could always put Franz Liszt's signature over it, But, and he's playing that beautiful piece, that the Voice of the Angels, which was, of course, the theme from one of his concertos.
We've even got an orchestral version of it in his violin concerto.
And he's playing away, and just solo piano, and the camera pans around him, goes out the window, you see the German countryside. And
it really is a remarkable mixture of a guy trying to lead a middle-class life, supporting himself with his music, finding that he has to make compromises along the way, being a nice guy, yet making lots of enemies. And then you've got this more profoundly psychological aspect of it, kind of paralleling it.
Yeah, right.
And that's what's... You really have a double appeal.
I think everybody's got that inside them.